Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cried the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
Freaky Darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlinghetti, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Join Jeremy Thursday morning as he brings you the headliner's ball, and Break On Through with Pam on Friday. Sit in with Aphasiana and Battle on Saturday as they teach you the fine art of becoming part sinner, part saint. And then every other Sunday, join Robert M. as he brings you the solace of shadows. These shows are designed so that you can color outside the lines with rich, raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, my co-host, Pam Rann. I can't wait to get into and read your words. Evening, Pam.
Hello, Rex. How goes it?
All right. What's up?
Oh, you know, all the usual stuff. Slowly but surely, the weather is getting warmer. I think we made it up to the 30s today. So, you know, and laid-back day, well, lots of cleaning today, but, you know, cleaning, listening to music, good stuff, you know. As always, looking forward to hanging out with you and, you know, other cool poets. And we'll be delving in tonight into poetry inspired by some poems of Philip Larkin, which I'm sure a lot of people have heard of his poetry, but those who have not, I highly recommend checking it out. So, yeah.
Right.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. So we got a fairly full board tonight. I think we have about 18 writes, which is decent, which I'm looking forward to delving into. And so I'll go ahead and I'm going to bring Kate on. So welcome, Kate. Glad you could join us.
Thank you very much, Pam. I'm very happy to be here. And good evening, Rex.
Yes, and how are you
Hello,
doing?
Kate.
Hello, my darling. How are you doing?
All right. Played with a lot of voices this weekend.
Yep. Oh, right. Okay, great. And, oh, sorry. And I'm looking forward to this evening, this morning, too, because it looks like there's some really good poems out there.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. I was reading through them earlier, and yes, people were definitely very inspired. Got quality and quantity, so definitely good stuff. And all right, Rex, whenever you're ready, we can get the ball rolling.
Well, let's get to it then.
All right. And up first, we have Dew on Morning Grass by Dammit Dave. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Dew on Morning Grass by Dammit Dave. I once had hope. It vanished in the air like dew upon the early morning grass. Brief was the joy that life and I would share. A test I could never pass. I once had love. It wilted like a flower when buried by the early winter snow. The fates looked downward from their ivory tower to deal good fortune yet another blow. I once had faith. It morphed into despair. It now lies at my feet as broken glass. My prayers are merely whispers on the air that vanish like the dew on morning grass. A poem. All right, Pam, what do you think?
Well, first of all, you did a great read there, Rex. I thought this was a wonderful rhyming poem. I like how he went with the extended metaphor with the dew on the grass. I thought it made a wonderful representation of the idea of love and hope lost. And it was beautifully written all the way through. But I was particularly drawn to that second stanza. I once had love, it wilted like a flower when buried by the early winter snow. The fates looked downward from their ivory tower to deal good fortune yet another blow. I really like the imagery and the metaphor, the idea of the fates looking down from their ivory tower in control of this man's life and destiny and whether or not, you know, love treats him kindly. So excellent write and very well done.
Well, thank you, Pam. All right, Kate, how about you? What did you think?
Oh, this was just lovely, wasn't it? I thought it was really nice. It seems to be sad, but with wonderful memories. But that last answer was a doozy, wasn't it? I once had faith. It morphed into despair. It now lies at my feet as broken glass. My prayers are merely whispers on the air that vanish like the dew on morning grass. Yes, that's Dew on Morning Grass is a lovely title as well. So yes, well done, Dave. Damn it, Dave, you did it again.
Nice. I got those opening lines. I once had hope, I once had love, I once had faith. And then the following back end of each line, I once had hope, it vanished in the air. I once had love, it wilted like a flower. I once had faith, it morphed into despair. Then he dropped in the goat with the dew on earth on early morning grass or the early winter snow for the second one. And then as broken glass, the back end kind of hits the note of progression through life. Hope in your youth and into your middles. Then that disappears as one ages. It looked like a flower when buried by the early winter snow. And then the back end, kind of hits with later on in life. I once had faith that morphed into despair. It now lies at my feet as broken glass. My prayers are merely whispers in the air that vanish like the dew on morning grass. So he completes that thought with the dew on morning grass from the title down to that first and second stanza, first and last stanza, bringing it full circle. The kind of like, well, if you think about birth, be the dew on morning grass, and you kind of revert back that way at the end of life. Brief. All right, Pam, we're back to you.
All right. I don't think Stelina recognizes your voice because she said Rex with a question mark while you were talking. It must be that demon in your throat.
Shining through yonder window.
All right. Up next, we have American Idol, Another Love Note to Suburbia by Guilty. And Kate, would you give that a read for us, please?
Yes, of course, no problem. Can you hear me all right? Am I loud enough?
Absolutely.
No.
Oh.
You're really quiet.
Oh, stop being a smart ass to Kate.
Okay, I'll just whisper then. Okay, nice. Sensible face on again. Here we go. American Idol, Another Love Note to Suburbia. Notes written by Rubes hit the lucky lottery. True. Perfectly cut green grass, June. Bored housewife gives local news. Reckless gossip, airhead Dave does lewds. Nancy's youngest Kathy poses nude as the apple pie on the windowsill cools. In the city, there are homeless dudes. White picket fence, private security views. Suspicious activity on the premise. Pursue. Move them along, whistle a blind man's tune. We give tides on Sunday service at noon. End poem.
Great read, Kate. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what do you think about Guilty's piece?
Oh, well, you know, I always enjoy Guilty's poetry, and you did a wonderful read there, Kate. I like the play on words with the title, with American Idol, and instead of being, you know, the idol that you worship, it's the idol, I-D-L-E, like, you know, the idea of, you know, like being idle, of being lazy. And wonderful imagery and metaphors throughout. I like how this speaks also on, what people think perfection is as far as life goes, but the kind of like the evil that hides behind it. You know, the idea of the suburban housewives and all that happens in suburban America that gets, covered up, especially in lines like Bored Housewife gives local news, Reckless Gossip, Airhead Dave does lewds, Nancy's youngest Kathy poses nude as the apple pie on the windowsill still cools. In the city, there are homeless dudes. And I like that the transition from the problems with the from the problems that suburbia deals with to the problems that the big city deals with. The idea, that there's a sense of judgment from those who live in the suburban areas that they're so much more superior because they're not dealing with a homeless population. And what they are dealing with is a population of people who have nothing better to do than talk about their neighbors, watch their pornography and, do drugs and blame and think it's all just fine and dandy. So I really like the message that came across in this one. Excellent social commentary and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Thank you. All right, Kate, how about you? Uh-oh, did we chase Kate off already?
Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, no, I thought I'd stop doing that.
You're mutating.
I did. I'm mutated like an absolute twit. Oh, and I've done so well. I've managed six shows. This is, six shows without doing it. I've got to break my record again now. Okay.
Well, now you've got to start from scratch all over again.
Yes. How annoying is that? All right, I've got to beat six. Okay, sorry. This poor gentleman doesn't want to hear about my woes. Yes, I thought this was very clever. I thought it was the play on words was excellent. The reckless gossip, that was my favourite stanza. Reckless gossip, airhead Dave does lewds. Nancy's younger Kathy poses nude. As the apple pie in the windowsill cools, in the city, there are homeless dudes. Yeah, the last line, that's sad. But the rest of it was amazingly funny. So I thought it was a very witty, very clever, very, what's the word I'm looking for? It had veritas. That's what it has. It's very pertinent as well. So thank you very much, Guilty. I enjoyed it.
I think the bite in this is people assume nothing ever happens in suburbia. That second stanza says a whole lot. Dave does the lewd. Nancy's youngest Kathy poses nude, and so on. But it does, there's a little easier life in this kind of suburbia. It's usually out in the sticks, but since he drops in that white picket fence, private security views, suspicious activity on the premise, pursue, move them along, whistle a blind man's tune, we give tithes on Sunday service at noon. That kind of thought with the white picket fence, the private security, that kind of walks into a rich person's suburbia. That's the gilded and gated communities. You don't find that out in real suburbia. You find stretches of farmland. You find quite a bit of space between areas and people. And they have their own problems just like everyone else. It's just, it isn't in your face because you're not sitting with like New York with 10 million people all huddled into a very small arena. So it gets, the thought of suburbia gets lost within the melee of the big cities. That's why the big cities are always in the news. Yes. You find the dying is just as complete and just as horrific and just as rotten in suburbia as you do in the city. People take for granted that it's always peaches and roses out in suburbia. It doesn't exactly walk that way. Nicely done, Guilty. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, where are we going next? Well, use Pam now too? Or are you mutating?
Cradle of Ashes by Daniel Deschino. Campfires dance as a tree in the wind, each flame waving in desperation from every breath of the earth. Ashes will nurture as they soften the soil, cradle for seedlings, an open view of sunlight skies, and trees sing in perpetual flickering from first sapling leaf and grow with fractal frames, flames of branch and limbs, to want of sunlight healing smile, to watch the days chase the night, to count the creatures that wander free, to offer birds a rest from flight, a peaceful tree, just let it be. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Kate, why don't we start with you, Kate?
Okay. Well, this was full of quiet thought. Cradle of Ashes. That's yes, I like that. Quite deep. Campfire dance as a tree in the wind, each flame waving in desperation from every breath of the air. Earth. Ashes will nurture as they soften the soil, cradle for seedlings. So this is this is a spring, thankfully. Leaves coming out, everything's starting to look as if it's alive again. Peaceful tree, just let it. Yes, that is basically what we need to do with nature for a little while. It's let it alone, let it recover, let it regrow. And, you know, we're just so cruel. Trees are so vital to us, and yet for a coffee table or a chest of drawers, or cut down a tree or six or seven or 5,000. It's quite sad. But yes, this is a lovely poetry. I liked it very much. Thank you.
Nice, Kate. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, you got to read it. What about you?
Yeah, I like this. It gives me a couple of different thoughts. It first of all brings to my mind the idea of actually a literal like forest fire, and the idea of renewal and rebirth. But it also makes me think, and this is the kind of thought I'm leaning towards, given that Daniel does a lot of photography, is the idea of what it looks like when the sunlight plays with the leaves of a tree and goes in between them. Like when you look up, like if you stand underneath a tree and you look up at it, at the bottom of the leaves, and you can see the shadow and light interplaying. But I also like the thought of the idea that it, you know, it is that, you know, that natural renewal when fires, you know, happen naturally, and life starts growing anew. But I like how this reminds us to respect nature and to take care of nature and to let it run its course. I particularly was drawn to that end line, but also ashes will nurture as they soften the soil, cradle for seedlings, an open view of sunlight skies, and tree sing and perpetual flickering from first sapling leaf and grow with fractal frames. Excellent lines and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. I got to go with that ashes line, too. That hits a very intelligent note, because there's a lot of pine trees. When they give off their seedlings, they give off at a certain temperature in heat. And then they fall to the ground and they'll start growing. But as the ashes that nurture the soil and soften it, and give it a we've always known that. We've done burns across the world. American Indians were doing controlled burns in the plains, because they knew if they did the burns at a certain point in the season, what they got next year was a richer growth for the buffalo herd and everything else to come back through and feed upon, which meant they had life. They did the same thing all over the world for various reasons. the idea to open up that view of sunlight sky, the trees saying a perpetual flickering. He's still running that thought of ashes and flame, flickering from the first sapling leaf, glow with fractal frames, flames of branch and limbs. Again, that note to fire. So the opening stanza kind of hits at that note of be careful of the campfires, because the natural burning comes with lightning strikes and other natural, normal occurrences during the year. So do not add to it by offering up an errant campfire. Always put it out first, properly, before you leave. And that's why the back end is just let it be. It's for letting them grow and then burn in their own time, when it is their time. All right, Pam, where are we going next?
All right, well, I have to say, a great observation there, Rex. Very cool. All right, up next we have The Trod Sod by Bill Schiller. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read for us, please.
The Trod Sod by Bill Schiller. Millions emerald shivs herald forbidden paths. My heels crush forward well as backward. Malleable blades were never made to stand. A mower is same as vacuum on floor of nature's bedroom. Ant infestation? Insects answer to pet parade in afternoon. Ground consumed by roots enables all to pass. So few follow the rule. Keep off the grass. And Paul. All right, Pam, what do you think?
Oh, man, this is great. You know, I love Bill's sense of humor with the large letters of, so few follow the rule, keep off the grass, in big, large letters. I thought this was an excellent brevity. I think that the trod sod sounds like it could be a dance. This actually makes me think of many, many years ago when I was still married, my now ex decided that he didn't want dandelions in the yard. So he took weed killer after them. And we spent the whole summer with like huge brown patches of in our grass. And I love that and the smell of fresh cut grass. I love the smell. And yeah, I kind of know I'm going off on little tangents here, but you know, just the fact that this poem is about grass and all the little life forms that you find it in, and it makes me think about, you know, just how much I enjoy that smell. I also really like how he describes, his description is this is just fun wordplay. I think millions emerald shivs is just the perfect way to describe grass. It's one of the most clever ways to call them, like these little sharp prison knives. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Kate, how about you?
Oh, yes. Bill has done a wonderful job here. When you saw the title, you're thinking, okay, Trod Sod, sounds like a ballad. No, it doesn't sound like a ballad. Yeah, I thought it was wonderfully done. I particularly like, that first line is incredible, isn't it? Millions of emerald shivs, that was really well done. But I love that Amor is the same as vacuum on floor of nature's bedroom. Ant infestation, insects, antlers, pet parade in the afternoon. So cool. Yeah, I think he did a brilliant job of this, a wonderful brevity. The last line, that was the kicker. So beautifully done, Bill. Thank you so much for sharing.
Absolutely. That last line is the kicker. It made me remember a song from Steppenwolf back in, I think, late 60s, maybe the very early 70s. Don't step on the grass, Sam. It was, it's evil, wicked, mean, and nasty. Don't step on the grass, Sam, and it will ruin our fair country. Don't be second-hand, Sam. he walked in that very same thing. As well as the idea of the old codger, who puts the sign out because it's got this bright green, beautiful lawn. He doesn't want anybody walking on it, not the kids playing on it, and certainly not the neighbors' dogs shitting all over it. So it's, keep off the grass, or I'll chase your ass.
Oh.
Thank you, Bill. All right, Pam.
All right. Up next, we have The Scent of Wet Cut Grass by Art Junkie, which is probably this poem I should have saved the loving the smell of cut grass comment for, but that's all right. I might end up repeating myself. And we do have a recording for this, so here we go.
The scent of wet cut grass. If I could, I would bottle it. The scent of wet cut grass, newly shorn, sticky with dew, amalgamum of summer earth, fresh rain and piquant sun, peppery and sweet as arugula. This is what green tastes like on the tongue. After a long day growing, a satisfying mowing at twilight. Pointy heads lying bodiless over decapitated wild violets. Bare toes delight in the sharpness. Songbirds make an easy meal of disoriented bugs, digging down from the light into rich black soil. Night boils with humidity and riding fireflies.
Great read, Art Junkie. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Kate, what do you think?
Oh, yes, that is an amazing scent. I don't know why it's so enticing and evocative, but it's just so clean smelling. Well, yes, if you could bottle it, you certainly would, wouldn't you? A little dab of that behind the ears in the morning before you go out. You feel great. But yes, I thought it was very well done. I thought each stanza had its own real point to make, a satisfying mowing at twilight, pointy heads lying bodiless over decapitated wild violets, bare toes delight in the sharpness. Yes, you could see that. You could really see that beautiful movement of somebody jumping over little sharp, spiky things. I thought it was lovely. I thought it was really well written and very well read. So thank you so much for sharing that with us, Art Junkie.
Thank you, Kate. All right, Pam, what about you?
Oh, I did enjoy this. I see that this is a pending pick, so congratulations to her on that. All the way through, this has wonderful imagery. It's really a treat for all the senses. I particularly like where she brings in, on the second stanza, fresh rain and piquant sun, peppery and sweet as arugula. This is what green tastes like on the tongue after a long day growing. You know, I love that she chose to use the taste, the peppery and sweet taste of arugula, you know, especially when you get the young leaves to describe what the color green would look like. And I like that this isn't about what you see, but what you smell, what you taste, and even what you hear. Songbirds make an easy meal of disorientated bugs digging down from the light into rich black soil. So I like that, you know, it's not just about the imagery, but it's also about the message of how you do the small creatures, like the birds, a lot of good by mowing the lawn because you provide, a meal for them. And, so just a wonderful write on the small, life system of the backyard. And so excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. I think the bite in this is the descriptors, because you can freshly mown your yards do have a distinct aroma, and it is earthy and it is a little sweet, and there's a bite to it. And she drops in that bite, the scent of wet cut grass, newly shorn. So you get a double bite in that thought. And sticky with dew, but also the its own dew, the moisture that's within the blade itself, amalgam of summer earth. Nice touch right there. And that next one, a pecan sun and dropping peppery right behind, following it. So you get, a double bite. Pecan is hints at the spiciness. Spice, a peppery and sweet as arugula, a little nice touch. This is what green tastes like on the tongue after a long day growing. So you get that double back sort of the fresh cut grass, but then you've got the taste rolling in it right off the aroma. Then it goes satisfying mowing at twilight. That is a nice time of day. Not too hot, not too cold. Just got the right bite in the air, and it lingers a little longer. Pointy heads lying bodiless over decapitated wild violets. Bare toes delight in the sharpness. There's that note of having the grass stick to your bottom of your feet because it's still sticky in that moment right before twilight hits. And then you get the evening meals made from you got the songbirds hitting to eat evening meals because the bugs are dipping out and it's a little bit more life, especially when the fireflies start rolling in too. That first note too, it's getting a little darker and their little bug tails are zapping on and off. Nicely done, Junkie. Thank you very much.
All right. We're back to you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I would like to mention that those first few poems that we read were inspired by the poem Cut Grass by Philip Larkin. My original plan was I was going to have us read the classic poems because they were all fairly short, but that was when the contest wasn't filling up. And then after I decided to do that, all of a sudden the contest just started filling up. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to skip this, make sure we get the, the all poetry poets work actually in. So, you know. If people want to go back and read his poetry, like I said, then I highly recommend that. But these next poems, the next two poems, are going to be inspired by his poem, Nothing to Be Said. And we have up To Men of Science by Jyoti Premastiya. And Kate, would you give that a read for us, please?
Yes, I certainly will. Okay, here we have it. Two Men of Science. How can we measure the depth of the sea? How can we count all the stars in the sky? How can we look beyond all that we see? How could we know what all these imply? Study, dissect, measure, and analyze. Accept if aligns with what you theorize. Reject if disproves what you speculize. Throw away credulity and always criticize. Stand tall and declare knowledge is power. Strip nature of her magic and wonder. Leave her naked so there will be nothing to ponder. Make intricate the simple. Make simple the intricate. Endlessly dictate, create, and calculate. And there will be nothing more to be said. End poem.
Great read, Kate. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what do you got?
I think this is an interesting write. It's definitely thought-provoking. I'm not 100% sure how to read it. And part of that is because of the way my brain works. But I know they have it labeled satire. And I don't always do real well with understanding satire. But what off the top of my head, and I do like that they put the questions in and they do make you, but off the top of my head, it makes me think about the whole idea of how people, I saw this statement that said, because people are always saying, trust the science. And this statement I saw, this quote I saw said, trust the science is the most unscientific thing to say because science is meant to be questioned, you know, and I feel like there's this whole idea of think for yourself and question the science and, you know, and test the science. And if it works according to your theory, you know, in multiple tests, then, you know, then, you know, it might have some validity. But if it doesn't, you know, then, you know, all, it's not science, you know, it's just an opinion. I like stand tall and declare knowledge is power. Strip nature of her magic and wonder. Leave her naked so there will be nothing to ponder. I can see the bite in those lines. You know, I feel like that part there, and this is my last thought I'll share, but that part there, as I read it aloud, speaks to me on the idea of some things aren't necessarily important to figure out. I mean, you know, yeah, it's, you know, science is, you know, an important thing, but at the same time, let's have some spirituality and magic within the beauty of nature. But definitely a wonderful, thoughtful write and very well done. And I'm looking forward to what you and Kate have to say.
Okay. Thank you, Pam. All right, Kate.
Okay.
What do you got on this one?
Oh, I didn't know what I was going to say.
Jesus.
No, it was wonderful.
And you're leading me up to the rest of it. So, there's satire on that note.
Okay, well, I thought the second stanza was absolutely wonderful, because this is kind of how I've always thought about scientists or people who have grants in the scientific field to study, dissect, measure, and analyze. And this is the bit I love. Accept if it aligns with what you theorize. Reject if it disproves what you speculize. Throw away credulity and always criticize. Well, to me, that's just it. That's them in a nutshell. If you've got a huge grant to do something and you find that the study that you're doing is not proving what you've already got your money for, then you reject it and you start again. So I thought that was very clever, very clever, very well written. And that, also that last stanza, that's so good. This is where the old envy comes in. Make intricate the simple, make simple the intricate. Endlessly dictate, create, and calculate. And there will be nothing more to be said. Beautifully done. Thank you for sharing.
Absolutely, Kate. You're right. There is satire in this, but the funny thing is it's heavily laid in irony because of the jab she takes at science. And what you said, Kate, about the getting the grants, well, you don't get those grants unless you actually put forth what those governmental entities wish you to put out in the first place. So you're expected, even if you fail, to come up with the correct theoretics that they wish of you, because that's what they want to print. And it's always like you got with the, there's nothing more to be learned of Egypt. We solved it all. Yes. Well, we've got Göbekli Tepe now after Zahi Hawass claimed for years and years and years there was no other culture before Sumer. Yes. We have more that go back 5,000 years before that. So the idea of we know everything is but a shit product of minds that are calculated to a singularity so far worked in their minds that when somebody comes up with a thought, an idea, a tidbit of wisdom pointing to something else, they beat that poor bastard into the ground, they run him out of the business, and they make his life miserable so he can't work in the field anymore. And that's not how science works. That's not how it's supposed to work. It is supposed to be open to the theoretics. That's how you move, you progress. I mean, look at Einstein's the theory of relativity and his theory of general relativity. He couldn't prove it at the time he printed those papers. Some of them he had to wait 20, 30, 40 years down the line but what he observed and made calculated thoughts on to be proven true. But that comes with the idea of actually doing it, proving it, seeing it being proven, and having it being proved once more and again and again. And I too looked on that last stanza, make intricate the simple, make simple the intricate. That's that idea of you're putting out flash paper endlessly dictating so as to keep the critics silent because they can't prove what they are saying in the moment, but on the other side, the guys doing all the dictating, creating, and manipulating cannot disprove it either. So it should always be open-ended. All right, Pam, we're coming back to your one.
You know, that was pretty much exactly what I said, and all I got was a damn okay. Jeez.
Well, I did say you said you didn't understand satire all that much, and well, that was kind of satire in and of itself.
Okay. Well, like I told you, I don't. I just have a hard time. Sarcasm and satire are two things that I have the hardest time reading. I can hear sarcasm sometimes, but not read it. But anyways, yes, I just have to give you a hard time. Sorry, Rex. I can't resist.
Well, sarcasm is drawn out along vocality. When it's written, it's a little bit more involved thought-wise.
Yes. Yeah, oh, exactly. Exactly. When people write something, and then you can't even tell if they're being honest. Like if somebody writes something and you take offense by it and they're like, oh, I was just being sarcastic. Okay. Like, I'm supposed to believe that?
It's a difficult one. I don't get irony at all. I always think irony is stating the bleeding obvious. That's the only way it strikes me. And sarcasm is the highest form, lowest form of wit and the highest form of ignorance. That's what I think about sarcasm. It's terrible. It's putting everybody down. It's not good. Sorry, just thought
right.
I'd put my top statement in.
I recognize that quote. I do. I recognize that quote. I can't. Who is that by, Kate?
I don't know. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I ain't got to be. It's all the things
probably,
in my head.
Probably William Shakespeare.
Oh, aye, for sure. Is this a dagger before me? No, I'm being sarcastic.
All right.
Oscar
Wilde. Oh, what's that?
Oscar Wilde.
Oh,
it's Oscar Wilde.
Okay.
Oh, I love his
that
work.
Was gonna,
oh.
That was going to be my 50th guess.
Very good. I'm going to use that line. I like that line.
All right. Up next, we have The Street Performers by Ben Hart. And Rex, oh, wait, no, it's my turn to read it. Well, you know what? I'm going to assign this one to you, Rex. I think it'll be better in your voice. So go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
The Street Performers by Ben Hart. Thermo eyes wide open, love seen through the lens of warmth, a bold invasion of a blue world, and the lone street performer plays blue instrumentals, a cold rebellion against the quiet. And he isn't there, with copper feathers in his cap, in open defiance of the music dying, and upon the closing of his lips, silence may have laid her trap, but she couldn't freeze his fingertips. Acoustic Revolution by the Belated Pugilist. Love hates the worship, but love stating her worth, queen of those pagan peripheries, of black horse and hungry earth. The only womb that ever expelled us was this gypsy garden of restive black dirt. Mama had black hair and blue eyes, and always told us kids to play outside, to chase fantasy and lose our baby teeth, take as much as we could steal from the cherry trees. Mama also had a fever, and since I have only dreamed her. This is acoustic atrophy, imperfect requiems on dying day, and with oblivion, just one loving look away, I bleed rum on me, the flame, in my haste to keep alive the fire. Oh, good God, light the pyres. And the absolution of innocence always comes early. Victim at 16, alive she'd barely been, before snakes slithered into Eden and had its way with Eve. Preacher X, by just someone screaming. God's taking names. Looks like his up on Sunday to be baptized in the breakers of melancholy seas of holy water. Sirens, tears, and sailors sweat, but it's all the same salt in the wounds of Preacher X. The preacher goes running with the Mustangs across mezzo-soprano roads, hoping to fall in love to an Amy McDonald song before the day is over and God knows they're gone. Martian One, by Somerset Stripe Society. Will the Englishman we put on Mars look for home among the heavens, listening closely for Stratford End screams, faking a lonely smile in the dark, slowly dying there because we let him? And will he figure out that we misled him, talking about Michael's REM dreams, with mute 21st century machines who only believe what digital eyes see and call that freedom? Never again have an atmosphere and breathe in it, a cup of tea in the garden, or a Sunday drive to Margate with the wife and her Pomeranian. Now that last one's more of a win. What a life, what a life, the English alien. And poem. And Kate, would you like to take a stab at this one?
No, not really. Of course I will. Well, you see, it's a nice long one, so I can just pick anything and sound like I know what I'm talking about. So I'll go for that. That sounds about the best way to deal with this one. Wow, it's good. And wow, it's deep. Ben, my dear, this is very well done. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was so much of it to try and, you know, get your brain around. But I love also the fact you broke it all down. You've made it into something different each time. Taking names. Oh, no, he's not. Looks like he is up on a Sunday to be baptized in breakers of a melancholy sea of holy water, sirens, tears, and sailors' sweats. But it's all the same salt in the wounds of Preacher X. Now, that's very good. I like that a lot. Wow, melancholy sea because of tails and sweat. That's really, really cool. I like it. I wouldn't want to be baptized in it, but I like it. And then Martian One. Oh, yes. That's another fabulous. Will the Englishman be put on Mars, look for a home among the heavens? I mean, yeah, you think about it. He's gone up there. He's not coming back. That's not much of a future for anybody, but I thought it was beautifully done. Yes, I enjoyed this, and I will be reading it again later on. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Thank you, Kate. All right, Pam, what do you think?
I like this. Yeah, I always like Ben's poetry. He writes the most interesting vignettes, you know, in that they tend to have, to me anyways, from what I observe, a little more neat perception than the usual vignette style. Brilliant imagery and metaphors. The main theme that I get from this is, well, first, from the first part, I get kind of the idea, the first couple parts, I get the idea of how the musicians, the poets, and the artists of the world are the rebels and the free thinkers. I also like how he brings in spirituality, but takes a bite out of spirituality. Preacher X makes me think of Malcolm X, I like the line, God's taking names, looks like his is up on Sunday to be baptized in the breakers of melancholy seas of holy water, sirens, tears, and sailor sweat, but it's all the same salt in the wounds of Preacher X. You know, it speaks on the idea of wondering if there is a God, if they truly do care about everything going on in the world. I also like the nod towards REM, the band, the lead singer. I know his first name's Michael, so that's why I assume it's a nod to him, but also a duality in the idea of reaching REM state of sleep where dreams happen. He's got some clever turn of phrasing here, and it speaks to me on the idea of being true to yourself here in this life, because this is what you have. This is where your dreams come true. I also had this really smile at the line about the Sunday drive to Margate with the wife and her Pomeranian. That actually made me think of a time I was taking a walk, and I was walking by this guy's house, and his little Pomeranian, little furious yappy dog, came running up to me, jumped straight into my arms. I had never met them before, jumped into my arms, and then suddenly looked at me and just had this absolute shocked look on its face, and then jumped out. And the guy was like, "Yeah, well, you looked a lot like my wife, so she came running to you because I was yelling at her." But I know, side tangent there in the little story. But as always, just amazing write by Ben Hart. I would like to be a fly on the wall of Ben's mind when he's writing poetry.
I agree, definitely.
Well said. Well, there's a couple of things that kind of walk in this that notes in open defiance of the music dying, based on the idea of playing music for music's sake instead of listening to the type of electronic sounds which are mute reality in music because you make them digitally. And he hits on another digital piece further down the piece about believing and seeing things in digital eyes that don't offer up anything towards humanity, I guess. Now I can't find it. Rats. Well, anyway, there is note to death in this, the death up there with the music. Also the death of innocence in that second one, and the absolution of innocence always comes early. Victim at 16, alive she'd barely been before snakes slithered into Eden and had its way with Eve. So there's that note of a biblical sense of thought as well as the loss of innocence. And then the idea of God's taking names, looks like his is up on Sunday. Again, note to death. And it hits on that idea of a bored preacher in that one, the preacher goes running with the Mustang across mezzo-soprano roads, hoping to fall in love to an Amy McDonald song before the day is over, and God knows they're gone. The idea of, is a thought to, before God knows they're gone, it means they've disappeared into the nether realms, meeting the sad man, Old Scratch. And then, again, thought to Martian One rolls in that idea of death. On the back end of this, will the Englishman we put on Mars look for home among the heavens, listening closely for distracted end screams, faking a lonely smile in the dark, slowly dying there because we let him? Oof, that's a little harsh. The idea of leaving someone up there and knowing, hey, we're not going to be able to get back there again for 3 years. And will you make it? It doesn't really matter. And on the back end of that, never again have an atmosphere and breathe in it. A cup of tea in the garden or a Sunday drive to Margate with the wife and her Pomeranian. Now, that last one's more of a win. What a life, the English alien. Kind of hits on the idea of being a foreigner in your own land, so to speak, as well as the death that rolls all through the whole piece. A death to humanity, a death to religious notes, a death to the fact that little is being paid to anything except what one has thought for themselves. Nicely done, Ben. Thank you very much.
I like that observation there, Rex, the depth to humanity. All right. Well, let's see what we have next. All right. So these next few poems are inspired by the poem Far Out. And I'm going to go ahead and put up your poem, Kate. So go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Oh, sorry. I've got myself muted again. I haven't quite got it yet. Give me a moment. Fresh, refresh. Oh. I thought I had a SoundCloud. Obviously, I didn't.
No, no.
I was hoping. Why I wasn't bothering. Okay, I'm still trying to get it up. You'll pardon the expression. Come to me. Oh, if I
come
hit history.
Come to me, my precious. Come to
Aha.
me.
Yay. I got it. Yeah, baby, I got it. I hope it's not a long one, is it? No, it's not. Memories and pain. I try to project to the furthest points of the known universe the loss I feel while gazing at those microscopic pinpricks of light, clustered together like happy children living in the moment. Were I able to be there in more than just my vivid dreams, I would scream out my anger and frustration against a backdrop of stars. This heart still beats, and I continue to breathe against my will. Don't tell me time heals, and I will feel less pain in those tomorrows. My greatest fear is that memories become vague and the pain diminishes. For without you, I cling to memories and welcome the pain undimmed. End poem.
Great read, Kay. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what do you got?
Well, first of all, yeah, great read
you
there, Kate. Yeah, I know. All right, so wonderful read and write there, Kate. I'm so glad you were inspired. I think it's funny that you asked if it was a long write, and I'm thinking, well, it's a good thing for Kate that we usually limit our writes to 350 words. But I like how this speaks to me on having an open, there's a couple different thoughts I think of this. First of all, it makes me think of astral projection with the mention of dreams and the first lines. I try to project the furthest points of the known universe. But I also feel like it can speak on the idea of having, an open mind and connecting with the universe. And I like how there's a spiritual tone to this and you know, that especially with the thought of astral projection, but there's also an emotive, a raw sense of, you know, like hurt and pain and sadness because of those memories that keep a hold of you. I really particularly, I mean, I like this all the way through, but I particularly like, I would scream out my anger and frustration at the backdrop of stars, and don't tell me time heals and I will feel less pain in those tomorrows. You know, and that is such a truth, because a lot of times when you're suffering from loss, whether it's a death or the end of a relationship, people tend to come up with cliches when it comes to trying to comfort you. And then my greatest fear is that memories become vague. The pain diminishes. That's such a hard hitting line because of the fact that it's like the idea that as much as it hurts emotionally to remember the past, what would hurt even more is to not remember it all, because at least there were some good times to hang on to. A strong emotional impact, wonderful imagery, and very well done.
Thank you, my dear.
All right, I guess it's my turn. It's got a pain, loss, and anger runs through it, yes. But those first six lines also offer up a kind of duality because of the picture you've got. That is the idea of sleeplessness. I tried to get the furthest points of the known universe, the lost axial, whilst gazing at those microscopic pink bricks of light, clustered together like happy children living in the moment. That's staring up at that at the sky, that picture, letting the mind wander. And that thought with vivid dreams is, again, I'm taking it as letting the mind wander. It's not about sleep. It's about being awake and refusing to sleep or being unable to, because you've got that note in that right in the middle. I would scream out my anger and frustration against the backdrop of stars. This heart still beats, and I continue to breathe against my will. Kind of that's the serious note to the pain and loss. And then that note to scream is, you're telling the universe, don't tell me time heals, and I will feel less pain in those tomorrows. You don't want that pain to be less than as you actually got it in the last time. But without you, I cling to memories and welcome the pain undimmed. That idea of biting into the pain, because it offers up those heartfelt memories you do not wish to be dimmed or shoved away, put in the back of the mind somewhere, or lost over time. You want them vivid in the moment, like that thought of those vivid dreams which you aren't having as a moment of sleep.
Yes, that's brilliant. That is brilliant. I went with prompt 5 because the title Far Out was just, it kind of spoke to me, because if you're thinking about these tiny little stars far, far, far away floating on air, you're not going to be able to reach them. They don't care about you. They don't know about you. And it kind of made me think how it would feel to gaze up at a star and think, where are you? Are you up there? Are you just in the ground? And then you'd want to scream out your frustration because life is so cruel sometimes. So, yeah, I enjoyed writing it very much. So thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Katie. All right, Pam, where are you going next?
All right. Well, let's see what we have next. Do-do-do. Moseying my way back to where I need to be. And all right. Up next, we have Hiding the Stars by Garden Delights. And it goes like this. In hidden places where light struggles to be, lies clusters of stars afloat in ocean waves of deep space. They exist without names. No one claims their discovery. No blueprints mar their surfaces. Nor was it ever inquired if they needed something, anything at all. As glowing suns often do, accordingly they endured without. Could these luminaries band together, creating their own dippers or crab? What of their fluorescent and red or blue or even green, allowing themselves to be seen? Perhaps they treasure the quiet of night when darkness and back alleys are the universe's gift. Shrouded in mystery, they seem to have drawn other paths closed, enjoying the effect of being an ill-defined body. There's power in the unknown, even to the point of engendering fear, and therefore respect all with little effort. Oh, to be a star. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Kate, what do you think about this one?
Oh, this is lovely. I like this one a lot. Hiding in the stars, that's just in hidden places where light struggles to be large clusters of stars afloat in ocean waves of deep space. And you think about that, that's been twinkling away for forever and probably died before we even see the light of it. That's what is wonderful about the deep space, about space itself. I am always fascinated by anything to do with the outside of our universe kind of thing. I love that. Because we don't know. We just have hardly a clue. Wouldn't it be terrible if we just never found out? We must do it at some point. Where's hyperdrive when you need it? This is brilliant. It really is. I enjoyed it so much. Could these luminaries band together, creating their own dippers or crab? What if they're fluorescing red or blue or even green, allowing themselves to be seen? Perhaps they treasure the quiet of night when darkness and black alleys are the universe's gift. Yes, I like this. It's clever, deep, and very interesting. So thank you so much for sharing that with us, Garden Delights. As ever, beautifully done.
Nice. Thank you, Kate. All right, Pam, how about you?
Yeah, this is an absolutely stunning write. You know, I love the imagery in this. I really enjoy and appreciate how she personifies the stars and talks about them as these beings of light that have their own needs, their own desires, but nobody ever bothers to ask them. You know, and I like how she brings in mythology and history, like with the mythology with the creating their own dippers or crab. You know, the what do you call those? constellations, you know, the Big Dipper and the sign of Cancer. I like how she writes about the gift of darkness, when darkness and back alleys are the universe's gifts. You know, when those times in the dark, when the light shines the brightest. And then another part that I really liked, when I mentioned history, this spoke to me on history. They seem to have drawn other paths closed. And, you know, because it spoke to me on the idea that how throughout history, stars have been a guiding light for ships and, you know, for sailors and other travelers. You know, wonderful personification, wonderful imagery, and a great delving into the subject of the stars. So very well done.
Absolutely. I can walk along that notation to the reality of the picture itself and the way it reads, especially at the bottom end. Oh, to be a star, that sort of that singular thing that one gazes at, that little touch of whether it be red, blue, green, that it utters up because of where it's situated and what bends around its existence so that it can be viewed as a color. But actually, I also like it on a metaphorical level to the idea of what a star is, shrouded in mystery. They seem to have drawn other paths closed, enjoying the effect of being an ill-defined body. That kind of hits to old Hollywood, where the stars weren't propagated as something that you have to believe in, have to see, feel, and be preached to by them. But they had a little bit more of a aloof angle going back 70, 80 years ago, where they had the allure and charm of nobody really knowing who and what they were, because their lives weren't put out as a daily massage for the masses to breathe in deeply of. And, ooh, did you see what so-and-so did today? God, E.G. No, could care less. But it has that kind of effect of being on that level, the ode to be a star, one of the originals, so to speak. All right, Pam.
All right. Up next, we have Faraway Dreams by Betty Page. And Betty was nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud. So here we go.
Faraway Dream. Shimmering in sapphires, violet blue decadence, lit vivid by sweet moonlight. Magically cascades gold dust. Shooting stars are all fading, making wishes so far away. as dreams become neon bright. Kaleidoscopes spin rainbows. Salvador Dali, surreal, touch of magic in his hand. Painting romance and darkness. Somewhere off in the distance, far away blue universe, stars seeming so out of reach. I desire to hold just one, place one deep within my heart, passionate love resounding, melodically elegant, divine symphonies of love, igniting faraway dreams, where it's just you and just me, singing in sweet harmony, creating midnight magic, embracing amidst seashores. End poem.
Great read, Betty. Thank you very much for the sound call. It is much appreciated. All right, Pam, what do you got?
I really like this one. Wonderful imagery. A bit of a different format for Betty. It's got a beautiful flow to it. You know, I know she mentions Salvador Dali in here, and I think that was a great reference. But the poem actually made me think of the painting Starry Night by Van Gogh. Like her choice of word and her choice of coloring really made me think of that particular painting. But I also do like that she brought in Salvador Dali's surreal touch of magic in his hand, painting romance and darkness somewhere off in the distance. It's always wonderful to see how different people will take the same prompt. And this has such a wonderful romantic and dreamy quality. And it speaks on not only the beauty of the stars themselves, but the beauty of love. I really liked passionate love resounding, melodically elegant, divine symphonies of love igniting faraway dreams. You know, though that sense of hope and that some sense of dreams that someday that love will happen. So excellent write and very well done.
Well, thank you, Pam. And Kate, how about you?
This is rather different than what we're used to from Betty, but I think this is, and I love her voice. I've never heard her voice before. It's so cool. I think this is just, it's sweet, it's sad, but it's so clever. It's using stars and kaleidoscopes, spin rainbows. I like faraway blue universe. Stars seeming so out of reach, I desire to hold just one place, one deep within my heart. Somebody who's so lonely. Really, it's really beautifully written. I really think it's just very sad and very sweet. So thank you so much, Becky. I really enjoyed this one. Faraway Dream, lovely.
It is dreamy, and adding that Salvador Dali touch was nice because it offers up looking into the surreal when it was actually the word had two words, which was super real. That sort of youth looking up the stars and offering up that note to a sweet moonlight, magically cascades gold dust. Kind of reminds me of Joni Mitchell's Woodstock back in the day. Again, the shooting stars were all fading. Make wishes so far away as dreams become neon bright, kaleidoscope spin the rainbow. Again, kind of youthful notes to star dreaming, so to speak. And well, she does offer that, but it's faraway dream, but she could also go star dreaming. And again, faraway blue universe, passionate love resounding, that thought of picking that one star out as a beating note to your stuffing in your chest, that glow of heat and radiant warmth, that kind of gives light to everything. It is kind of sweet on that note. So nicely done, Betty. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, where do you want to go next?
All right. Let's see here. That is a good question. Up next, we have Obscure Skies by Arch Doom DeVille. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Obscure Skies by Arch Doom DeVille. Under the veil of the eternal night, the stars shimmer with a wondrous might. Their radiance flickers, casting doubt and blight in a world of shadow where all's a plight. But in their beauty, there's a hint of doubt, a flicker of hope that we cannot flout, leaving us lost, unsure of the route, in a world of shadows that we must scout. The names are lost in the sea of old, where secrets and mysteries are forever told, yet their light still shines with a regal gold, a source of wonder ever so bold. In the silent stillness of the night, their brilliance fills us with delight, as we glimpse a universe far from sight, with enigmatic beauty so quiet and right. Let us bask in their luminous glow, and dream of the cosmic secrets we don't know, for the stars show a truth that's mystical and slow, a wondrous realm that ever does bestow. And Paul. All right, Kate, why don't we start with you? But you got to press the button first.
Oh, both of us. Right, sorry about that. I hate when that happens. It's so unfair. Okay, Obscure Skies. I got it now. It's just the right one I'm looking at, Obscure Skies. Yes? Yes? Obscure
yes.
Skies? Thank you very much. Okay. Under the veil of the eternal night. Yes, I thought this was a nice dark one. This is just, it's so full of the creepiness of cosmic secrets. So that's, there we are, my favorite last stanza. Let us bask in their luminous glow and dream of the cosmic secrets we don't know. For the stars show a truth that's mystical and slow. A wondrous realm that ever does bestow. Lovely use of some fabulous words there. And I have to confess that I was actually typing a comment while you were reading. So I only got the last sentence. Oh, I am a bad person. Sorry, Archie Jim. I do like your work, by the way. It's wonderful. And you've written this so well. See, in their beauty there's a hint of doubt, a flicker of hope that we cannot flout, leaving us lost, unsure on the route, of the route, in a world of shadows that we must scout. Yes. Very, very, I'm going to read this again, I think, and read it properly, but I did enjoy what I heard, and I think you did a wonderful job, so thank you so much.
Thank you, Kate. All right, Pam, what do you got?
Well, again, I'm really glad to see that Archdoom was inspired. This has a wonderful rhyme and flow, beautiful imagery. I like how it has such a philosophical quality to it, on the idea of how there's so much mystery in the universe yet to be understood, and the idea of the balance of light and dark. I really like, their names are lost in the sea of old, where secrets and mysteries are forever told, yet their light still shines with a regal gold, a source of wonder ever so bold. It's really a fine tribute to the stars and the lights and the planets within the sky and everything that's above us that we take great delight in and that we learn from. I also like that he not only brings in the imagery, but the silent stillness of the night. I think that line there really encapsulates well what it feels like to stand out beneath the stars out in the country and, you know, just look up and appreciate that kind of mysticism, that kind of beauty that you can get lost in. So excellent write and very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. The Obscure Skies is a nice quiet note to the idea that we think stars only come out at night, but the reality is They're always there. The reality is they can't be seen during daylight. So you're locked into that note. So you can only see them at night. But I do like the thought. It went with a monorhyme for each stanza. So that works an easy flow of thought and voice. And it also hits on that that idea of the last stanza. Let us bask in their luminous glow and dream of the cosmic secrets we don't know. For the stars show a truth that's mystical and slow, a wondrous realm that ever does bestow. We forget because we've lost out on that knowledge that has come way before us. The stars were what everyone gravitated to, as above, so below. Those large temples down in Mexico, the Yucatan, the pyramids in Egypt, and other pyramids you find across the world, they're all aligned as above, so below. There's that imprint of luminosity because of where the stars align and how they interpreted everything through those stars. They knew a whole hell of a lot more back then than a good many people do today. I mean, there's one, I think, one African tribe who even knew about the, just after World War II, who already knew about the second dwarf star, I think it was in Sirius, back in the 40s, early 50s. And we hadn't even discovered that star yet. They knew about it.
That's always been fascinating to me about the kind of stuff that ancient cultures actually knew that we don't give them credit for. So I'm glad you brought that up, Rex. Very cool.
All right, where are we going next?
All right, up next we have Born Under a Plenilune and by Kay Heartless. And Kate, would you give that a read for us, please?
I certainly will. I have to say, though, after this I'm going to have to go because I've been awake since 2:30 a.m. and it's now 6 a.m. So I've not had a lot of sleep. So I'll just find this. That's why I'm starting to sound like I don't know what I'm talking about. That's my excuse if I'm sticking to it. And I know when I start to burble, I'm tired. Ah, dear. Here we are. Born under a plenilune. Born under a plenilune with a head full of stars, eyes that drift outwards, orbiting lumps of matter. Snipped from the galaxy's womb, first cried the final bars of a sleepless serenade, a warbled, conceived on the move, warped soft spot scar below an invisible halo, its spherical chin quivering. Yawning black hole doom, flaking stardust arms, cluster of milia, hiccuping gas, fear not, this too will pass. Under a plenilune. End poem.
Great read, Kate. Thank you very much. All right, Pam.
All right, yes, definitely a great read, Kate. And thank you for sticking the show out this long with us. I really appreciate you. I will admit, I did have to look up the word plenilune and found out that it means a full moon. So I have to say thank you to Kay for that, because I always enjoy getting to learn new words. And now I'm going to have to find a way to sneak the word plenilune into one of my own poems. I like that this has a mythological feel to it. And, you know, that it speaks of a person who is born at a magical time and, you know, but also I think speaks on the birth and death of a star itself. Conceived on the move, warped soft spot scar below an invisible halo, its spherical chin quivering, yawning black hole doom, flaking stardust arms. In fact, the more I read this, the more I feel like that it speaks on a star being born and then a star falling to earth. Fear not, this too will pass under a plenilune. The idea of watching a falling star streak across the sky comes to me in that end stanza. So just amazing imagery, beautiful write on the birth of a star, and very well done.
Nice to sit there. And Kate, you got to read it. How about you?
Oh, it was a lovely poem to read. It was really enjoyable. Sorry about stuttering over that word. But now we know what it is. It's a lovely word. I didn't even know there was another word for a full moon. Isn't that cool? Yes, I'm fascinated by all of this, what's going on up there somewhere. I wish one of them would visit us. It would be great. Not the stars, the aliens. That's what I meant. See? Burbling. Yes, it was beautifully written, and I really enjoyed it. It was very clever. That first stanza. I love how Rex has got so much self-control he doesn't laugh out loud at me. So good. Ah, dear. Anyway, beautifully written. I enjoyed it a great deal. I probably could make more sense of it if I wasn't half asleep. So I will hand it all back to you. Thank you so much. I've enjoyed myself. Thank you, Kay Heartless, for your poetry and giving me a new word. And I shall see you all very soon.
Have a good night, Kate.
All right, good night, Kate.
Thank you. It was my pleasure. I'm sorry I'm a bit of a twit when I'm very tired. But, yes, if I can sleep, I certainly will. I know. I'm beyond belief, but I do try to be sensible. Okay, peeps. Lovely to speak to you both. And I'll see you soon. Bye.
Good night.
Good night, my love. Good
Bye.
Night. Good night, Pam.
All right, so our next few writes, and I don't know how many we'll get through, we're going to most likely have some carryovers, are inspired by the poem Ignorance. And the first write we have up is Ignorance Indicates Idiocracy by Jenny Hunt, 2017. And we do have a SoundCloud for that, so here we go.
Ignorance indicates idiocracy. Confused and lost in this world of delusions, can't find my way back to factual reality. This life I'm living feels as if it's an illusion. Ignorance is not bliss, but my mind's frailty. Cover up, act after act, omitting and lying just to save one's face. Getting opinion confused with fact, that ignorance can cause turmoil and disheartening disgrace. Ignoring truth is knowledgeably damaging. Anymore, life is all one big blacked out blur. Ignorant conspiracies require skillful imagining. Don't be a sheepy lemming. Validate your research. To change ignorant misleadings into wisdom, it takes strength, education, and determination. National ignorance can start worldwide ruinism. Think for yourself. Listen to your own intuition. Lack of accuracy makes one less viable. False teachings can lead to one's idiocracy. Not everything you read or see is reliable. Lies make it hard to trust anyone of authority. End poem.
Great read, Jenny. Thank you for the sound class. It is very much appreciated. All right, Pam, what do you got?
Oh, I like this one. It has a nice deep to it. Not deep, sorry. I was reading a message that had the word deep in it. So, yeah, that just came out the wrong way. this has a nice bite to it. Hard-hitting lines, powerful imagery. I like how it speaks on the idea of learning to think for yourself and not be that sheepy lemming, that follower. Some great lines all the way through. I really like that she takes a swing at some, well-known phrases like ignorance is bliss, and ignorance is not bliss, but my mind's frailty. Don't choose to be ignorant. Ignoring truth is knowledgeably damaging. Any more life is all one big blackout, blurred. Ignorant conspiracies require skillful imagining. Don't be a sheepy lemming. Validate your research. That goes back to what I was talking about earlier with the idea of, you know, having to validate research. And if you can't validate it, then it's nothing more than an opinion. Great lines all the way through, but I do particularly like where she says, national ignorance can start worldwide ruinism. Think for yourself. Listen to your own intuition. And then the end line, lies make it hard to trust anyone of authority. Amen to that. I'm going to vote Jenny for president. That's what I'm going to do. Since you can't run, Rex.
Too many vipers in D.C. They all got to be cleaned out. I mean, as well as the state and local ones as well. Thank you, Pam. And you're right. This idiocracy has been easy delivering that note over the last 60 years. But it's gotten harder the last four because all of their other mixtape duplicity is still on air from over the last 40 years. And thanks to a lot of people who remember a ton of stuff, look back in history and find, oh, hey, here's what you said about that not too long ago. So the lies that they used to imprint easily, and they did idiocracy because they believe the American people are idiots because they buy the wholesale trade in voice from news as truth instead of actually looking into that which you already question in your own mind, but simply ignore it out of laziness. Eh, it's what they say. It's got to be. They wouldn't just do that. Yes, the biggest lies out there are the ones that are told the loudest, with the huge note to being so preposterous that it has to be truth, and it's always been sold that way. So nicely done, Jenny. All right.
All right. Up next, we have The Twins by Mam Yaw. And it goes like this. Among the hawthorn, my mother had borne me and my twin snake, as she did forsake. Hands reach up while white eyes smile, raspy scales slither, and forked tongue mutter. Thorns kiss pale skin, red blood runs thin. It dries, then aches, payment for mistakes. Standing aloft, blind to all, deaf to all who calls, man and serpent entwined, bound into one mind. We step out from the thorns, naked and ignorant of scorns, with scabs oozing pus, to find she who abandoned us. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. Well, this is kind of harsh. That sort of, let's see, me and my twin snake, she did forsake, kind of hits on a, it's got to be a little bit of mythical quality within that, that offering of a child being born with a non-representative twin kind of gives them maybe a power of second sight or something along those lines, and that they're always kind of shunned and looked upon as maybe evil because they understand and know things most people don't, and that digs at the norm of things and kind of puts them in a wary position, kind of like a lot of half kids are treated in foreign nations, like back in the day with Vietnam, the children were shunned, or Korea the same way, and China the same way. The
birthed out of a foreigner with one of their own kind. They weren't looked upon kindly. And then would step up from the thorns, naked and ignorant of scorns, with scabs oozing pus to find out she who abandoned us. That kind of hits with the idea of maybe that second angle actually taking over because they're tainted by their treatment. So they look upon the world in a different way, or look upon the world as something that is not a very pleasant atmosphere for they themselves. So their scorning actually becomes something they grow into. Don't know if that was actually meant, but I guess we'll find out. What about you?
Yeah, I like this one. It had short, impactful lines, wonderful imagery. Of course, I had to cheat, and when I read this earlier today, look at the AN, and I did notice that she did put, in Philippine mythology, there are said to be children born with a snake for a twin. They are called Tawak, and they are accorded with supernatural powers and mostly shunned for their strangeness. And I like how this is a poem on mythology, which I always really enjoy and appreciate learning from Mamia, the different Filipino mythology that she writes about. But I also like that it can be taken as a metaphor, you know, as someone with a special needs son and, you know, who has seen throughout the years the way people treat people with a physical or mental handicap. And although I will say things I feel like have gotten better, but still not where it should be, I feel like this works very well as an extended metaphor for how people shun people and judge people because they are different. And it makes me also think of the whole idea, like the end stanza with the speaking, though she who abandoned us, it speaks very well on the idea of not even being loved by your mother, being abandoned by your mother. It makes me think of the mythology of changelings. And how, like, if you had a sickly child, you left them by a tree because you assumed that it was said that, you know, because they were sickly, they must have been a changeling, and, you know, therefore you abandoned them in hopes that your real child would be given back to you. And I think those end lines speak powerfully on the idea of being abandoned by a mother. So excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, epileptics were kind of looked upon that way 150 years ago.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, where are we going next?
All right, let's see here. All right. Up next, we have The Systematic Features Bug Me by Ted Pilot. And go ahead and give that a read for us, please, Rex.
The Systematic Features Bug Me by Ted Pilot. Sleight of hand and mismanaged plans, the citrus segment marches fall short by wayward, far-fetched, short-sighted demands. Who is to build a cathedral when stuck with timber on hand, nor architect or alchemist can fortify cedar wood or cheap plywood found in a skip outside the local hardware supply store. Preschool boys build sandcastles fit for photographs set to be stuck on the face of the garage fridge, yet their mile-wide smile fathers, even under the wizardry of two cases of beers and a bottle of Tennessee whiskey, would conjure any illusion for the apples of their eyes to build Rome in hundreds of days. End poem. All right, what do you think, man?
All right, well, first of all, great read there, Rex. I really like the imagery in this one. It's another one that has a nice bite to it. let's see here. Who is to build a cathedral when stuck with timber on hand? No architect or alchemist can fortify cedar wood or cheap plywood found in the skip outside the local hardware store. I like how it speaks. Well, I don't know. I guess to me, it speaks on the idea of the changes in architecture, but also it almost has a sense of humor and a bite to it, and the idea of how things nowadays are not built the same way. Like, they fall apart with the same thought of, like, I feel like preschool boys build sandcastles fit for photographs set to be stuck. Speaks on the idea of how things are built nowadays to only last so long. There's no history to them. So, excellent write and very well done.
Well, I think it starts at nicely, I think. They start up front. Sleight of hand and mismanaged plans. The citrus segment marches fall short by wayward fart that short-sighted demands. There's and other things in here. The thought of building and the preschool boys. It hits on the idea of how education has been changed so far from what it used to be, and with that sleight of hand and mismanaged plans, nothing has been accomplished over the last 40 years except to make everybody more stupid, because they can't build that Rome in 7 days, so to speak, or offer up that note of building a cathedral without an architect or an alchemist to fortify cedar wood or cheap plywood. The idea is we're not teaching them what they need to know in order to make those erections possible. And they're not being taught enough on any level that gives them anything a step forward. I mean, back in the day, there used to be a ton of stuff in school. We had you had wood shop, you had home economics, you had auto shop in school. And hey, there are some schools newer today that are doing those things. They've got to let themselves out pretty well, because not all those kids are going to go to college right out of school. But if they get something like they've already got a couple of years of woodworking, they get into carpentry. If they've got auto shop, then they can go into auto repair. If they've got welding under their belts in high school, they can immediately go out to the job market and do something. Same thing with plumbing. The same thing with any of a number of other items that used to be in schools all over the country, but are no longer there. This is a system that was changed to supposedly meet the demand of the future, yet they've forgotten the demand of the future still is precluded to hold those jobs of plumbing, fixing AC, welding, fixing the cars, and every other job that can be filled coming out of high school, and not just on a learning level, but with already a couple of years of know-how under their belts coming out of high school.
You know what? I like that. Very cool thoughts shared there, Rex. And so true. I remember, I think I was actually one of the, there was only like a year or two after me where they continued with home economics. And classes like that really were important, you know, skills to learn. So, all right, and let's see what we have next. All right, up next we have Knowledge Song by Lockdown Larks. And who read the last one? You did, yes. Okay. Yep. And it goes like this. Time is nothing until we are, and we know time until we expire. In time, there are things to know. In our space, parents help us grow. From then on, it's what we perceive, whether to know or just believe. Time and space quickly comes and go, so we choose what we need to know. Maybe know as much as we can that enables a life's journey to plan, or spread wings and fly, fly, fly into the endless knowledge sky. Add knowledge by making connections, gleaning from other-minded reflections, and collective values on the whole may help all to reach their goal. But remember, whichever knowledge song we sing, in the end, we all will know nothing. So it's here and now for you and me. Leave knowledge to befriend eternity. End poem.
Great reading. I like the reflective notes you got in this. Time is nothing until we are, and we know time until we expire. Nice touch, a note of nothing in the beginning until birth, and all of a sudden, we know time until we expire. And in time, there are things to know, and our space currents help us grow. There's that note there of passing knowledge and keeping the mind open to keep learning a little bit more of anything and everything that helps during the course of your life. And then on the back end, he hits on that note of, so it's here and now for you and me, leave knowledge to befriend eternity. The idea, again, changing hands, passing down that knowledge to children, grandchildren, the neighborhood kids, it doesn't really matter, as long as you're paying it forward, so to speak. What about you?
Yeah, I like that. I like your thoughts there. And I thought this had some wonderful imagery and rhyme to it, a nice lyrical quality, especially in those last few stanzas. I like how it speaks on the importance of knowledge, but not being closed-minded, remembering that you can learn from a variety of people and a variety of sources. There's an excellent write on being open-minded. I like how it says about, gleaning. Add knowledge by making connections, gleaning from other-minded reflection, and collective values on the whole may help all to reach their goal. So very well done.
All right, where are we going next?
All right. Up next, we have Libraries by Garanwi. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read.
Libraries by Garanwi. Hiding in Hull, a card index of life, avoiding Bohemia, safe from bright lights, Soho never called. That other country, London, left him cold. Humber gray suited and poetry on shelves, no roaring boy of sullen art. Finding out his parents fucked him up, or so he wrote they did. Out 60s turn on beats, beyond the reach of spliffs, a small sherry, if you please, a fillet was semi-detached, respectable, where the winds are knotted poet's tie. And poem. All right, Pam, what do you think?
Oh, I like this. it was a bit of a nod and a bite towards the poet himself and towards poetry and the idea of different ways of thinking or kind of the idea of, I think, of thinking too highly of yourself, especially with Soho never called, that other country London left him cold, Humber gray suited and poetry on shelves, no roaring boy of sullen art, finding out his parents fucked him up, or so he wrote they did. I guess some of the best written poems are poems we write about how our parents fucked us up. Wonderful imagery and metaphor, great humorous lines to me anyways on the idea. I think there's a couple different thoughts here. One of these is thinking too highly of yourself. The other is that the idea that a poet or an artist isn't recognized for their brilliance or worth anything until after they're dead. So excellent write and very well done.
Nicely said. Let's see. Oh, okay. I think the idea of, what was it? Hiding in Home, a card index of life. I like that. Hiding in Home kind of hits that nice note of a quiet, small town life, avoiding Bohemia, again, safe from bright lights, Soho never cold, that other country, London, left him cold, other country. The idea of London being such a, maybe a cosmopolitan mecca that it's not part of the rest of the country itself, just a separate entity all of its own. I do like the thought of humble grace suited poetry on shelves. Finding out his parents stocked him up, or so he wrote they did, again. And then that out 60s turn on beat, beyond the reach of spliffs. A small sherry, if you please. Our Philip was semi-detached, respectful, but the Windsor knotted poet's tie. That Windsor knotted tie kind of back into the thought of that other country, London. So kind of a little turn in on itself from quiet solitude in Hull, avoiding Bohemia as a whole, but ending up in another country anyway as a noted poet. So nicely done, Bronwyn. All right. What have we done?
All right. Well, we have one poem left, and so we don't have to rush through comments. I'll just put that at the beginning of our break on through show on Friday after midnight. So great show tonight, Rex.
Okay. All right. Yes, great show. Thank you, Pam. Thank you, Kate, for sitting in for quite a spell. And let's see, we got to go. Thank you for Manuel, Stelina, Jen, Azer for the boards. We appreciate you. So come on back next Tuesday when we'll do it one more time. Good night, everybody.